We are in 2 Timothy chapter continuing, and I think we may finish today. 2 Timothy chapter 4, Paul's second letter to his friend Timothy. And so last week, we did affirm the preaching ministry of the Word there, how the preaching ministry of the Word protects us from the preaching ministry of the Word protects us from, as it were, being the kind of person who accumulates for yourselves teachers in accordance with your own desires. And so God's Word and preaching protects us from the process that we read there in chapter 4, verses 3 and 4. And so I want to jump now into verse 6. Again, Paul's letter, we know that Paul, shortly after, right now writing this letter in Roman imprisonment, that shortly after this letter is finished, Paul will die a martyr's death. And so these are literally his last words. And he's aware, very aware, of the impending problem that he has in front of him. And so he says these words. I'm just going to read a few verses here to verse 8. "For I'm already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. I fought the good fight. I finished the course. I've kept the faith. In the future, there's laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to those who have loved his appearing." There's a contrast here in the kind of legacy that Paul is going to talk about here, the kind of life that he's lived, and encouraging Timothy to live the same kind of life. And then later in the chapter, what others are equally known for. And so it's very striking. I mean, I'm going to read verse 9. "Make every effort to come to me soon." And you can read and hear Paul's words are they're somber. He says, "For Demas," anybody in here named Demas? It's not a great name, but what's less good is what he did. "For Demas, having loved this present world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. Crescens has gone to Galatia, Titus to Dalmatia. Only Luke is with me." So pick up Mark and bring him with you, and he's useful to me for service. "But Tychicus I've sent to Ephesus. When you come, bring the cloak," which Paul's obviously cold in house arrest, "which I left at Troas with Carpus, and the books, especially the parchments. Alexander the coppersmith did me much harm. The Lord will repay him according to his deeds. Be on guard against him yourself, for he vigorously opposed my teaching. At my first defense, no one supported me, but all deserted me. May it not be counted against them, but the Lord stood with me and strengthened me, so that through me the proclamation might be fully accomplished and all the Gentiles might hear. And I was rescued out of the lion's mouth." Let's just end there. And so we see a contrast in Paul, a little bit that we're going to see, and then also those that had departed, Paul says, Alexander the coppersmith. He had vigorously opposed Paul. And so the only thing we know of Demas, for example, the only thing we see, the records of history only show this legacy, that Demas loved this present world. That's all we know of him. The only thing we know of Alexander the coppersmith is that he vigorously opposed Paul. That's the only thing we know. The only thing we know of Crescens is that he left Paul. The only thing we know. You know, it's interesting. I was reading that this week. I was kind of preparing, and part of me, just as a pastor, is thinking through what it is for a pastor to read this letter. And obviously, Timothy's a pastor. And just thinking of those that have left. And I understand Paul's writing here because, like it or not, even if they left for other reasons, the way Paul says it, they departed me. And they left me. I understand that, the discouragement of Paul and seeing how easily it is for people to desert a ministry. As Paul's dealing with being cold, but he has Luke with him. We know that of Luke. Luke, there's not much known of Luke. I mean, obviously he wrote the book of Luke, the Gospel of Luke. Obviously he was a doctor. But one thing that marked Luke is his faithfulness. And here you see, but Luke is with me. And so ministry is a hard thing. Then we see Paul's legacy. Notice verse 6. We're just going to land here today. And it won't be a long message. For I'm already being poured out, verse 6, as a drink offering. Paul alluding to something Jacob did, I think, in the Old Testament, the book of Genesis, pouring out a drink offering before the Lord. And Paul's saying, I'm being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. It's interesting, that word for departure there comes from a Greek word that is the same Greek word used for if you were to release an oxen from his yoke. It's the same word that would be used of someone getting the what is the weight, the anchor, an anchor of a ship, getting the anchor up on the boat so that the boat can be released. And so Paul is saying that that this departure is not a bad thing. It'll be a relief. It'll be like the oxen being released from a yoke. It'll be like a boat finally released off into a voyage, a native voyage. And so Paul indeed is recognizing, no doubt about it, the end is near. And everybody in this room one day will have a similar day. It could be today, probably not. The odds are in your favor that you make it through today. But it could be this year. It could be next year. It could be in the next 10 years. The fact is everybody's got a day when you will depart this earth. And when that day comes, it'll be helpful. It'll be helpful for you to be able to say what Paul says in verse 7. It'll be helpful. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. In the original language, there the order for the way the words are said, the order emphasizes that Paul is reaching the end of the line. And this is the Greek word order here. The good fight I have fought. The race I've finished. The faith I have kept. And so the sermon today is really a rather simple one. It's just how are you doing with these things, this analogy that the Christian life is a fight, very important fight for the gospel and what God is calling us to do and be as individuals. Politics is great. It's my sport. Politics has been my sport. I was politically paying attention to talk radio when I was 14 years old. I've been paying attention to politics for a long time as a hobby. But it is not what is going to. And we ought to just remember that even as November 3rd comes up, it doesn't matter who is elected. It matters to some extent about certain things that might be very important. But it, at the end of the day, it is not going to matter one bit unless the church is the kind of church that is actually fighting the kind of fight that God wants us to fight. Unless we're doing that, this country's going nowhere very fast. And I believe that. And so I get caught up in little skirmishes on social media here and there, and then I get all lit up, you know, at 2 a.m. Then I'm thinking, I got to preach tomorrow. I can't get all lit up. At, you know, it's going to be 4 o'clock. I'm gonna get, my blood pressure's going to go. I got to calm down. You know, the thing that really should captivate us is this. I have fought the good fight. Now, I don't think we ought to pick fights, but listen, if the Christian life, you don't have to pick a fight. Paul calls it a fight. Paul calls it a fight. It is a fight. You don't have to look for it. You don't have to invite it. If you are walking with God in the way that God wants you to walk, it is going to be a fight. Now, the question is, it's raging and it's happening. Are you involved in fighting in this fight or not? And there are going to be plenty of Christians one day that will stand before eternity, and they will not be able to say with any credibility that they were involved in the fight. But there is a fight. And it's not for the culture of our country. That is a fight. But it's not this fight. This is for the heart and souls of lost people. And for us to be the kinds of people that glorify God with our lives. That's the fight. There are other fights that are really important that I'm very passionate about. But they're nothing relative to this fight. This is the thing. Have you... And so the question, so if your Christian life can be lived with no difficulty, if your Christian life right now is being lived pretty comfortably, you're friends with everybody, there's no conflict that is involved in your life because of the way that you live, if you're living in a way that doesn't invite conflict in the way that Paul's talking about, he's in prison precisely because of the way that he's lived, because of the gospel that he's preached, because of the passions that he has, and that kind of living is going to invite conflict, and if there's no conflict, if you're not in a fight, then you're not doing the in some general sense, you're not. You can look at that and say, "What am I doing wrong?" And so there is a fight. You don't have to invite it. You don't have to jump into it. It's there. The question is whether you're involved in that or not is a different question. I fought the good fight. I have finished the course. This is. Obviously, a race, right? I've finished the course. The course I have finished. Everybody's familiar with races. I was always competitive at that sort of thing, you know, and when I was a kid. One thing, I can't think of a race that I didn't ever finish. Can we say with credibility that we are finishing the race? And then I've kept the faith. I was reading this week, I've got, if you've been to my office, you know, I've got a lot of books, a lot of commentaries, reading, have these commentaries out. What in the world does it mean to, but what's he mean by the faith? Is this doctrine that he's talking about? Is it, I have continued to trust God? Is it that? Is it faith in that sense? I've continued to trust God in my life. I've kept the capacity in my life to stay faithful and believe all that God says and trust Him. Is it doctrinal? Is it more like, no, these core beliefs I have stayed faithful to? I think both. I've stayed faithful to these core beliefs, and they've driven my capacity to trust God. They've driven my capacity, these beliefs that I'm not going to shake on. I believe that what God says here is true, and so therefore I have faith in God. I've kept the faith. Have you kept the faith? This is really, anybody in this room could preach this message. I'm just talking this morning. But it's a sober reminder of sort of a qualifying question. How are you doing in your walk with God? Perhaps you're being poured out as well, and your departure is soon coming. I have no idea. Some of you older in years are closer to that day, just likely closer to that day than some others that are younger. And so for you especially, is it fair to say that you could one day put this on your tombstone? I have fought the good fight. I've finished the course. I've kept the faith. So I wrote this note. Before you finish your course, you must fight the fight. There's no finishing unless you fight the fight. And so at some point, it's just, are you going to jump in and answer the call of God on your life, whatever that is? As Paul said in verse 5, fulfill your ministry. Have you done that? Are you all in? To poker analogy, we preach. This is one of the first sermons I preached here 7 years ago. All in. I mean, are you like sort of all in? I can't even remember now. Was it Malachi maybe, or Nahum? One of the minor prophets. I should have prepared a little bit better for the sermon. I don't remember this, honestly, but we preached the sermon all in. This is an old sermon, 6 years ago, but I remember the idea. The minor prophet, Jerusalem's walls aren't built. The foundation is laid waste. The temple is in shambles. And the minor prophet says this to the children of Israel. He says, listen, your houses, they're all boarded up. They look nice. You're pouring into that. And in the meantime, God's house is in disarray. And he's basically calling the children of Israel, at what point in your life will you take seriously your obligation to God? You've got your 401k, you've got your house, you've got all the stuff that is important for you. You've got your family, you've got your picket fence, you've got everything in place in your life. At what point does God's house, at what point does God's ministry become something that you're like, okay, got my stuff, I've lived enough for myself, I've done the thing, I've got my job, I've got my career, I've got my family, got my kids in place, kids at college, at what point do we say, yep, all in, everything that is important to me in my latter years of life, I'm in. I'm 45, and it occurs to me, although I've probably as a minister, I recognize that with my talent level, I probably could be preaching till I'm in my 80s. I get that. But just from a point of view of my retirement, I'm 22 years in ministry. What have I accomplished and what have I done? And then I've got maybe 25 years ahead of me on the outside of ministry, just in full-time ministry. And it's like, am I with these last years, am I going in? Am I going all in? Some of you guys have spent your stuff, you spent your years on whatever it is, and you have some left to give and to invest and to put in terms of your time, talent, and treasure. You've got some left, but you've spent it. You've spent a lot. You've got some. Are you in? And this is because one day, this is the reality for all of us. We're going to be poured out as a drink offering. I fought the good fight. I finished the course. I've kept the faith. Will we be able to say that in eternity? And then Paul, verse 8, we're almost done. In the future, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness. Now he knows what his prize is, which the righteous judge... I think this is important. So we've talked about it already. Paul's alluded to the capacity of God as working as judge. He said this all throughout this letter. But he is a judge, and this is how Paul chooses to look at and define Jesus' ministry when we first meet him. Our first meeting of Jesus, the ministry that Jesus takes on, will not be of loving father, of whatever. It's judge. That's the first way we meet God. That's the ministry that defines our first meeting. So we're going to one day meet a righteous judge, and he'll award me on that day. I trust that you could say that with the kind of clarity and conviction that Paul has here. He's going to award me on that day. Paul always talks about that day. Everybody's got that day. You might not know what day it is, but we said it again. Let's say it again. Paul's always talking about the day. Talking about hope in the day. Everybody's got a day on the calendar where you get to meet this righteous judge. Everybody. Everybody. Obviously you don't know what day that is. But it's not for you to know. But God knows, and it's circled, and it's for certain, it is going to come. So the future is laid up for me on the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award me on that day. And not only to me, but to those that love, his appearance. In other words, to people who have lived life in a way that they can say, "Man, we sing the song often. Even so, come, Lord Jesus, come." Where we could say with conviction, "God, I love you. I can't wait to see you. Life for me is better with you in my life, not outside of it. I can't wait." Listen, a lot of Christians in my experience, I shouldn't say that, but it seems like Christians in my experience certainly aren't like, "I can't wait to meet God." Okay, most of us have tremendous regrets that we're going to have to deal with in life. And I think the way to deal with it is to say, forgetting the things which are behind, they're behind me. I can do nothing about them. I am pressing forward to the high call of God, which is in front of me. Nothing you can do about your past. There's everything that you can do about the years that you have left, the time that you have left. And so we say, we've said this often, but Paul says in is it Philippians, for me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. And I love that that sentence, because it's kind of, it begs for an obvious analysis, and that is this. Paul says, for me to live is Christ, and therefore, if for me to live is Christ, then therefore to die is gain for me. Because if I'm living for Jesus and I die, then everything that I have and that I've lived for, I get an ultimate payoff, because I get to be with Christ. And so dying for me, when for me to live is Christ, dying for me in that world is absolute gain. But the converse is also true. That for me, if you can't say that, if you can't say for me to live is Christ, and therefore to die is gain, if you can't say that, so for me to live is not Christ, then dying for you is loss. If for you to live is your 401k, dying for you is loss. If for you to live is your position, the status that you have in life, if for you to live is something other than Jesus, then dying for you is an absolute catastrophic loss, because you've lost everything. The only value, eternally speaking, is for you to make a life that is all in, where you're saying, for me to live is Christ. Then with some clarity, you know, to die is gain in that world. To die is gain in a world in which God is everything for me in this world. Then dying for me is gain. But if life for you is something other than Jesus, for you, death is not something you're going to want to look forward to. It's going to be all loss. And so we said this because I like the analogy, but we said it a month or so ago. You know, it's the analogy of like, this is eternity, right? This is forever. This is forever, this cord. And imagine this cord goes all the way downtown, and then this cord goes all the way to Columbus, and then it goes all the way to West Virginia, and then to Florida, and then that cord just goes around the earth, you know, and this is the cord. And we're living, and that's forever, right? That's forever. And this is this little, the end of this plug here is your life. This is your 80 years, your 90 years. And what you do here impacts all of this, that cord that goes all forever, that goes around the earth, and then it goes around the earth again, and then it goes to the moon, and then that cord keeps going, and then that cord goes all the way to the sun, and it goes past the Milky Way, and then you get what I'm saying. And then it just keeps going, because forever is forever. And you get to impact forever. And the only time you get to impact that is not then. You won't be able to change forever. That's set. What's determinative, the thing that's determinative in all this is what you do right here. Is what you do right here. And so if we're going to be the kind of church, and I mean not church, I mean you, if you're going to be the kind of person that is going to honor God with your life, and you're going to see benefit, and for you to live is Christ and to die is gain, that's the kind of person that you're going to be. You're going to have to go all in. There's no more sort of I'm kind of in, you know, I love God, but I also love my other stuff here. Listen, you can't serve two masters. You've got to go all in. You can't serve two masters any more than you can point in this direction and in this direction at the same time. It's impossible. You have to. Jesus says, "Choose this day whom you will serve." And so there's a point in life when we're saying, okay, I'm all in. And then when we do that, brothers and sisters, if we can live that way, then we'll be able to end our days in a way, as Paul is saying here, where we could say with credibility and passion and conviction, I've fought the good fight, I've finished the course, I've kept the faith. And our church, as a body, has come to Jesus moments coming out of it. Are we going to take this seriously? This morning's simple message, I actually am getting done right now. How are you doing in your walk with God? Are you fighting the fight? Are you racing? Are you like, man, I'm going to keep going. This is not easy. In season, out of season, but I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep the faith. Can you say that with credibility? Listen, there are a lot of things important. We're coming upon very important things for America, for sure. They pale. Nobody's going to, in eternity, in 10,000 years, nobody's going to care who won this election. I promise you that. In 10,000 years, the only thing that will matter to you, in 100,000 years, the only thing that will matter to you is, did you live for Jesus 100? Were you sold out for that, for the relationship that you have with Christ? That's the only thing that will matter in 10,000 years. I promise you that. We as a church need to potentially make commitments. I ask you, have you fought the good fight? Can you make some determinations to go in with your relationship with God? Be the kind of person that God's called you to do.